We even see activity in countries like Yemen. And it's like, Yemen? Why is there such a noticeable degree of fraud, crypto fraud, emanating out of suspected Yemeni actors? We're not really sure right now. The thought is that because they don't have a real economy, that this is becoming their kind of shadow economy. But it's still a theory.
Hello, and welcome to Public Key, the podcast from Chainalysis. This is your host, Ian Andrews. With the price of Bitcoin setting new all-time highs and meme coins suddenly back in fashion, we're going back in the archive to one of our most downloaded episodes ever. The guest is Evan Coleman, founder and CEO of Cloudburst Technologies, and the topic is crypto market manipulation. In the episode, which was first recorded in February of 2023, Evan explains mechanics of market manipulation attacks, who the orchestrators are, and the countries being targeted. He explains how Cloudburst technology can detect coordinated trading activity and uncover the individuals behind the scams. We also recently caught up with Evan to add more commentary to the episode. He discusses the sudden rise of crypto prices, the biggest market manipulation concerns for 2024, and new data that his team is seeing that the general public should be aware of. Last thing before we jump in, the Chainalysis team also compiled on-chain data that could be used to identify elements of possible pump and dump schemes. We posted that in a recent blog and included it in the 2024 crime report. Links for both assets can be found in the show notes. And of course, if you're interested in these topics and you want to learn more, you have to join me in person in New York City on April 9th and 10th for the next edition of the Chainalysis Links Conference. We've got more speakers than ever, better topics, and amazing content. So I can't wait to see you there. A link to register is in the show notes. Last thing before we get to the episode, although we discuss the impact on the crypto investment landscape in this episode, please remember, folks, our podcasts are for informational purposes only and are not intended to provide legal, tax, financial, or investment advice. Listeners should consult their own advisors before making these types of decisions. So today I'm joined by Evan Coleman, who's the CEO and founder of Cloudburst. Cloudburst is a new startup focused on this topic of market manipulation. Evan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm going to imagine you guys just launched out of stealth a couple months ago. Most people listening to the podcast have not heard of Cloudburst yet. Maybe just give us the 30-second preview of what you're building and why this is so important for the time that we live in today in this world of cryptocurrency.
Sure. So, I mean, look, market manipulation, not just in the crypto world, but in the broader world, it's not really a secret. I mean, there's headlines every day about like GameStop and AMC and how even in the mainstream equities world, people are manipulating the market through mass action on social media, on the deep and dark web. In crypto, it's even worse because these assets are even more volatile. And what we're seeing is that there's millions of people out there on the internet who are forcibly moving the price of these cryptos, and it's not small market cap tokens. It's the ones that people know about and you probably own. And that is what's remarkable, is they're moving the market up to 500% over various periods. And they're pulling in a ton of money. And what's amazing is that nobody is really tracking this properly. And that's where the impetus came for what we are doing now.
So give us the high level and we'll get way into the details as we get into the podcast. But like, what is Cloudburst doing about that problem? Because what you just described is frightening. It's a suspicion that I've had over the last couple of years, but I didn't have a good quantification of it. You just put some numbers behind it that this is very big, very real. What's the solution? What are you guys working on?
Sure. So basically, look, it's exactly as you said. Out there in the deep and dark web, on social media, there are these groups, there are channels, there are chat rooms where millions of people are gathering in a single room. What they're doing is either they're doing what we call like a crowd pump or a flash pump, where out of nowhere, someone will post the name of a commodity and everyone will kind of rush in to try to buy that commodity, either in a specific exchange or just broadly, and will start moving the price over the space of sometimes 5 to 7 days or longer. Then there are, of course, the ubiquitous and fairly well-known countdown pumps, the time pumps. And I think some people may have seen this. This is where they say, okay, in 7 days at this exact time, we're gonna post the name of a commodity here and you need to buy it. And this is gonna be the exchange we're gonna target. This is the paired base currency. You gotta be prepared for that, get money ready. And then they'll do that countdown at the very last moment, they'll post the name of the crypto, right? Now, sometimes what they'll do is they'll post it in the form of like an image, so it's sort of like difficult to read. As it happens, our background, the background of the folks at Cloudburst, is scraping data from the deep and dark web. We're really good at this. We have a lot of experience in this, and we know how to get this data real time. That's the challenge, right? Getting this within seconds, because otherwise it's meaningless, right?
That's right. If you get it 2 months later, it's like, well, that was interesting research, but you're not doing anything about it, right?
2 months, but you know, even 2 hours, honestly. This stuff is fleeting. I mean, you really need to have it right now within milliseconds. So we take that data and we parse it and we break it down and we understand from like a broader perspective, the folks that are doing this, looking at the market, are they actually effective at what they're doing? Are they really moving the market? What's the price differential? And then we're creating scores, reputational scores, to understand, okay, this person is advertising a pump, but you know something, they're never successful, so this is meaningless. We can avoid this. This pump is being advertised by somebody who really knows what they're doing and has a tremendous effectiveness in terms of moving the market. This is something we need to pay attention to. And by doing that, we can actually read the market before it happens. We know what these folks are going to do because they move in patterns. Thinking about this in a broader perspective, I'm sure most people think pumps happen all the time during the day. It probably doesn't, there's probably no pattern, right? But there is. As it happens, most, if not all of the pumps take place between about 8 a.m. Eastern Time, New York, and about 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, New York. Why is that?
You're kidding.
They're targeting North Americans. They're targeting people on the East Coast of the United States. They're targeting Wall Street. When you're thinking about this, this is very targeted. And when you start looking at the kind of network charts, these folks are moving in cartels. They're moving in an organized way. And nobody knows about this. You know, you have the organizers who know everything. You have the participants who know some things. And then the rest of us, and we kind of see the market moving in these arbitrary ways, and we don't really know what's going on. We can track all of that, and thus our API is able to alert our customers before this happens. We know where the price is going to go, we know where the volume is going to change, and we know who's doing it.
This is fascinating. I mean, my own experience getting into crypto 2 years ago, it was a little bit surreal. Now, this was in the up only period of 2021, but I would have friends, you know, former colleagues out of the blue reach out and go, Ian, I'm thinking about buying this token. What should I do? And it was a little bit scary because I'm clearly not the person you want to take financial advice from, right? And I didn't have any insider information. So I would very quickly say, look, my perception is that if you're not in the inside circle who's driving the market, you're the exit liquidity. Like, don't touch it.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's where the money is coming from.
And if you think you're in the inside circle and it's a really big group of people, you're actually still the exit liquidity. Like there's a very small number of operators who are really, truly going to reap the profit. And even the supposed insiders are actually still probably going to take a loss. And then the general market who's trying to watch charts or look at technical and fundamental analysis, they're almost certain losers, right? I mean, is that consistent with what you guys have been able to see?
I think what you just said is exactly this. If you're trying to read off a chart and trying to understand where the market is going, you're trying to understand volatility that has no logic or rationale to it. Like, these folks are just doing this through action. It's not because the crypto has suddenly really appreciated in value. And the money that you're paying to buy it, that money is going to line their pockets. There is $120 billion of volume per year that's being sucked out by online crypto pumps and dumps. We're working with an academic team at the University College London, and they looked at 5 million deep and dark web messages that we had gathered. They looked at the data from it, they processed it, they look at the market pricing and the volume and the change in pricing and the volume. They concluded it's $120 billion in volume per year. That is 6 times the money that is lost in ransomware. It is a huge amount of money. And again, look at what they're targeting. They're targeting North America. So guess who's paying that price? It's mostly people in the United States.
It's interesting that there's not greater outrage about this. Like, you don't actually hear anybody screaming, jumping up and down, making a big deal. Like, I lost all this money. Is that like a personal investment sort of shame? Like, oh, I picked the wrong one and it went down? Or are people making just enough that they're not mad about their losses? Like, any idea why
that
would be?
Look, people are mad about their losses. They just don't know who to blame, right? They don't know why. It's this kind of like mystery show with this like black box and you have no idea what's going on. Oh, it went down. Why? I don't know. And because no
so
one
can Cloudburst see who some of these actors are? I saw a post that you dropped on LinkedIn recently. We'll link to it in the show notes for everybody else. But you started talking about being able to collect KYC data for a lot of these actors you're presumably identifying in some of these dark web forums. Did I catch that right?
You caught it exactly right. So again, our background is hunting for people, right? It's hunting the bad guys. That's what we come out of. That's our modus operandi. So in addition to try to monitoring the market, we're trying to understand who these folks are. And not just the organizers, because that, look, that's very interesting, the organizers. But it's also about the participants. Because while there's thousands of organizers, there's hundreds of thousands, millions of participants. And why are these people participating in this? What is their goal here? And if you start looking at the geographic spread, because we can get a ton of information out about who's doing this and why, because of the fact that we're not looking at the blockchain, which is very kind of sterile, right? It doesn't tell you about intent. There's nothing about why someone is doing that. But the deep and dark web tells you a lot about intent. It tells you a lot about why and how and who. And so we can even see phone numbers of the people that are doing this. And as a result, we get a better picture of where they're located. And sure, look, what's the number one country that comes up in terms of geographically located right now? Sure, the United States, hands down. Let's not even beat around the bush about that, but that's not surprising. The number two country that so far we've been able to identify users from will come as a surprise, I'm sure of it.
Okay, let me take a guess before you say it.
No, I already said it. You see that? I spoiled a surprise. What can I say?
I talked over the top of you. Say it again for us.
Saudi Arabia.
You're kidding.
Not something you would have thought of. Number three, I believe, is like Iran.
Okay.
And then like it's like Yemen, Iraq. You know, the countries that start coming up here, it's like a FinCEN investigator's dream come true. Like, what are these people doing? And I think that's one of the bigger questions here is like, who is organizing this? Why are people doing this? Who is taking the money out? We talk about all of these different kind of get-rich-quick schemes in terms of cryptocurrency and the Web3 universe. And we know that it's not just scam artists. It's not just ordinary scammers that are doing this. It's also organized criminal organizations and others that are even further up the chain. And understanding that this is a global phenomenon. There are people that are in rogue states that are doing this. There are people in states where there are sanctions applied to it. This starts getting very interesting very fast.
If I had guessed, my guess would have been Russia as the location of most of the organizers.
Well, but I have good news for you. Like, Russia is in there too. Okay. We don't want to leave them out either.
Maybe we should rewind a little bit because I think it's important for people to understand the context that you came to create Cloudburst from. So you were a co-founder at a company called Flashpoint and built that company over a decade. And for people not familiar with Flashpoint, preeminent dark web collection specialist. Tell people what that means. What were you actually doing for clients?
Sure. So, I mean, I got the somewhat unwelcome nickname back about 10 years ago as the terrorist search engine. So, yeah, I know. It's great. What a great way of introducing myself on dates. So what did we do? We looked at Russian hackers. We looked at terrorist organizations. We gathered all this data and built sort of like a Google for the deep and dark web. That's sort of what Flashpoint is. It's about cybersecurity. It's about terrorist threats. It's about all of that. And again, Flashpoint started in my second bedroom here in New York in the West Village, right? So it was, it's kind of weird now that the company has like around 400 employees and stuff like that. It's a very strange thing because at one point it was like me in my underwear. But you know, it's this was sort of a genesis of us understanding that cyber intelligence is this huge universe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while Flashpoint occupies a very important piece of it, it's a huge universe. And I think Chainalysis is sort of one of the exceptions to the rule in that Chainalysis sees itself, I think, as an intelligence company, right? Not just a crypto fraud company, but an intelligence company. And I think a lot of the folks that are in this universe, they still think of themselves as crypto fraud or whatnot. This is cyber intelligence. We're part of the cyber intelligence universe. We're trying to use information from kind of the internet and from online worlds to better understand trends like fraud, physical threat, et cetera, et cetera. That is sort of the general market that we're in.
You hit it on the head there in terms of the description of Chainalysis. Like when people say, oh, what do you guys do? I say, well, we take all this online transaction activity that's public and we connect it to real world entities so that it's useful to humans to understand what's going on. And the process of doing that, it's an intelligence gathering operation basically. So completely agree there. So how did you go from Flashpoint, which was not crypto specific? No. I mean, we have a partnership with Flashpoint here at Chainalysis. Like we incorporate a lot of your dark web intel into our product. And there's certainly an intersection, I think, between crypto and the dark web. But what brought you to crypto and ultimately founding Cloudburst?
Sure. So, you know, my role at Flashpoint really was to look for new sources of data in the deep and dark web that would be interesting to customers, to clients, or just for development purposes, you know? And it was really around the time, I think, of COVID, you know, everyone's favorite time, that I was sitting at home by myself. And
As we all were.
And starting to come across these odd channels on Telegram, on Discord. You know, look, we were used to seeing some pretty odd stuff on Telegram and Discord. People are selling like pink powder to random people in Ukraine, right? But these channels were unusual because they had like 4 million people in them, each one, which by the standards of most of these technologies is very rare. It's hard to get that number of people in a single room. And yeah. For me, anytime you can connect back the loss of money directly to the deep and dark web, that's very interesting because that's a direct connection that everyone understands. But looking at this, I think, look, the natural question when you first look at this is, look, is it all shitcoins? Is this all, you know, penny stocks that nobody cares about? These are, you know, the bottom feeders of the universe that no one really cares about. And so I started looking into it and I started looking into what they were pumping, what these folks were manipulating, which cryptos they were trying to move, and how much they were trying to move in it. You know, I started realizing these guys weren't just kidding around. I remember one organizer back last April, they boosted one particular crypto. And afterwards, they posted a message in the channel and they said, look, we're really sorry. It was a complete failure. We only moved the price by 50%. It wasn't the 500% that we were targeting. That's their definition of failure, 50%, right? Yeah. So if you understand—
In a period of days, probably,
yeah,
too.
Right? The other remarkable thing is that when we started this, we assumed that these pumps are lasting for what, like a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is. And I guess that's been the other major revelation that we've come across through looking at the data is that some of these pumps are lasting for like a week, week and a half or more. It's just incredible how much money is going through the market. These are not the conclusions we expected to make, and they are sort of eye-popping.
It's really fascinating because when I think about pump and dumps, the first thing that comes to mind is that movie Boiler Room.
One of my favorites,
right?
By the way. Yes.
Yeah, it's such a great movie. And, you know, so you get a bunch of people who are locked in some Long Island warehouse. You know, everybody's got a telephone and they're calling up people and trying to sell some penny stock to them. And if they could move the price, you know, 20, 25% and then dump their holding, like, hey, we all made a good profit, move on to the next target. The scale you're talking about here is multiple orders of magnitude larger. I mean, 4 million people in a Telegram room who are in on the pump, suddenly you take their combined social media outreach, right? We're not using telephones here. We don't have to have a directory of people and actually get them on the phone. People are eagerly signing up for, you know, YouTube channels and other Telegram and Twitter channels to hear about what's the next big coin to move. And so I would imagine there's a combinatorial or exponential kind of growth of message reach beyond my classic thinking around pump and dumps that is happening in crypto.
Look, 7 years ago, Telegram was used by like Russian hackers and like ISIS, and that was it, right? Yep. Nobody even knew what Telegram, if you asked the Telegram, people like, are you going to Western Union? Now, you know, your grandma uses Telegram.
Totally.
You know, it's on a phone, it's easily downloadable, everybody has it. It's ubiquitous, right? And
yep.
So what that means is that now people in the farthest reaches of every continent you can think of, people that don't have desktop computers, right? And have very limited cell phone access can still take part in this. It's we're crowdsourcing the universe here, right? Literally. And if you're looking, again, the spread of geographic countries, these are not all countries that are well connected. These are not countries that have high degree of internet usage. And that sort of tells you something, which is that this problem is going to get worse. And because there is no regulation right now, I mean, in some ways, some of this you might argue is even legal.
There's certainly people making the case for that, right?
Sure, absolutely. So that's sort of the problem here is that these agencies that normally would be tasked with enforcing the law and regulating this, they don't have any way of tracking what's going on in these rooms on Telegram, because this is not what traditional intelligence providers are looking at. This is not the data that they're collecting. It's irrelevant to most of them, right? It's relevant to regulators. It's relevant to people that are doing the trading, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is that even then, it needs to be crunched down. It's not enough just to do raw collections, right? It's not enough just to collect all the messages. What people need is, okay, these are all the messages. Now, these are all the active pumps, and these are the people organizing them, and this is their reputational scores. We're cutting through the forest, right? There's this kind of rainforest in front of us. You can't see anything, right? We're kind of cutting a path through it so you can see what's going on, right? Understanding the reputational scores is very important. There are a small group of these people who, you know, we score between like 0 and 1, where like the highest score is like 1, right? Some of these people have scores of like 97, 98. You can kind of guess how effective they are. And we're looking, and we're also, by the way, weighting our scores based on what's happened most recently, right? Even if someone was really successful like 5 years ago, but in the last month has done terrible, they won't have a good score. So if someone has it like a 97 or a 98, that means that whatever they're doing is really impacting the market. They have a lot of people behind it. And it's really not unlike at all what you see with GameStop and AMC. It's very much the same. And you have these hedge funds who are making these huge bets on the market, and they're getting undone by people on Twitter. At least they can see the people on Reddit and Twitter. They have no idea what's going on in Telegram. It's invisible, right? It's basically invisible. Yeah. And that's the worst part. They don't even know it.
Question for you. So it sounds like today Cloudburst is focused on the crypto markets specifically. Is the technology you've built more broadly applicable? Like in the future, could you also look at equities or commodities markets?
Exactly, Mundo. You just hit right on it, which is that the technology, look, we're looking at volatile markets. We're trying to understand that volatility. We're trying to understand where that volatility comes from and why, so we can basically move around it, right? We can avoid it. We can help educate people so that they don't get sucked into it. And there's really no reason why that should just be limited just to crypto, right? Again, I hate to bang on that drum, but people are losing tons of money on GameStop and AMC every day, right? These ridiculous bets. And as it happens, the same technology is applicable to that as well.
So we touched on a minute ago how your technology could obviously be used by regulators and the people really charged with ensuring market integrity to better understand who is manipulating the market, what assets are being manipulated. But it seems like there's also a lot of value there if I'm an investor. You can keep me out of being the exit liquidity for somebody else's scheme. Is that
That's true? Exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. I mean, look, you know, again, I think there are a lot of investors out there who have come up with very smart investment strategies. And these strategies are based on the idea that the market is legitimate, that all the actors are acting in rational, legitimate ways. And unfortunately, that is just not the case in the cryptocurrency market, right?
Yeah.
There is no rational movement. Things are moving arbitrarily. You can't just pretend that things are going to work the way you want. Our slogan is crypto is risky, invest in intelligence. And that's really what it is. Like, if you're going to invest money in this market, you should also be investing money in making sure that things are secure, right? When you go into a bank, you pay bank fees, right? And those bank fees, what do? They ensure that your money is being protected. The bank is taking pains for cybersecurity, et cetera, right? If you're doing it with crypto, you're sort of on your own to make those investments. And we are going to provide people with a much better sense of certainty about where the market is going and that they're not throwing their money into a dark hole, especially if they're investing a lot of money, where it could be a lot of difference in terms of the price.
For sure. It occurs to me that I think there's a distinction that's pretty widely held between, say, Bitcoin and Ethereum as being the most legitimate, least manipulated. Yeah, and maybe you could add some of the other primary L1, L2 native tokens onto that list. And then everything else, right? And there's millions of tokens because it's so easy to create one on most of the EVM compatible chains.
Sure.
You know, you or I could spin one up in the time we've been talking on this podcast and presumably start selling it by the end of the day. So low cost to create them. Is that view accurate based on what you're seeing? Or is there manipulation happening in maybe some of the more credible, longer standing assets as well?
Yeah, look, I mean, initially, when we started doing this, everyone told us it's shitcoins. Yeah, there may be some money in it, but it's shitcoins. And we didn't know what the answer was. And I'm reluctant to argue with people who know a lot about this market, right?
Sure.
So we decided to actually look at the ones that are being pumped. And I think that was what was remarkable to us is that, yeah, sure, people are on the internet pumping shitcoins all the time. But if you look, actually, as it turns out, most of the stuff that they're pumping, it has a market cap of at least $1 billion.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing, like, for instance, during the last few months of Elon Musk craze, where there has been a resulting also craze in like Dogecoin, right?
Yeah.
Ton of activity in shorts and pumps in Dogecoin. Organized shorts and pumps. That's what's, you know, it's not just pumps, it's also shorts. These guys are aggressively targeting these currencies. Yeah, I mean, they even do go after Ethereum and Bitcoin. How effective they are with those, it's a little harder to tell because it's a much larger market, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to say that if you think it's just stuff that you would never touch or stuff that's just garbage coins that, I don't have to worry about that. No. These are major market cap tokens that people have put a lot of money in. There's a large market cap. It's an active market. Don't be deceived by thinking that this is all shit coins. It's the reverse. Another surprise to us. We didn't know that that was going to be the case.
I've read some things that seem to point to, you know, even Bitcoin and Ethereum prices, a lot of the price movement is actually driven off of derivatives trading.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And so that's not necessarily, like, you can take so much more leverage. Because I think one of the thought processes that people go through is you go, okay, well, the market cap of Bitcoin is, you know, $800 billion.
Yeah, right.
Currently, it was actually quite a bit higher than that. So it would be hard to amass enough capital to have market moving effects. But if you suddenly are trading in futures contracts where you're 100x leverage, it's a lot less capital necessary to move the price on a short-term basis. And if you can amass a lot of people trading one direction or the other, it seems possible, but I haven't actually seen any data backing up the claims that that's really where some of this short-term price movement comes from.
There's a couple of factors you have to keep in mind, which is that number one, frequently these folks target a single platform. They'll start target a single cryptocurrency exchange. So then it's not just a matter of like, well, it's a huge this or that. They're targeting one exchange. So they actually have the ability to sort of move it within that exchange. The other thing is, and I think this sort of plays in exactly what you said, is that whenever you can get 4 million people moving all at once, you never know what's going to happen. Even with Bitcoin, if you can get them moving fast all at once, things can change. I mean, and I think that's sort of the moral of the story here, which is that volatility that you see in the market, a lot of that is false volatility. And it should be understood, the price of Bitcoin is not just radically changing day to day, right? Because of natural reasons. And if you don't understand why that's happening, you should take caution. That should be that should be something that you should like, that should be like, why is that happening?
It's a great question to ask, right? I think people diving deeper into this, particularly if you're heavily invested, is like just good advice to try and reason about this stuff. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned centralized exchanges were frequently targets of this. Sure. What about DeFi platforms? Because I think we've heard a lot recently about how the safety of DeFi platforms, all transactions are on chain, therefore it's much harder for the centralized exchange shenanigans that we've seen in 2022 to be carried out. But what are you seeing there from a price manipulation standpoint?
I'd love to be able to tell you that logic makes sense, but unfortunately it's just not the case. They're targeting decentralized exchanges as well. I mean, sure, why not? That doesn't really mean anything to them, right? I think once again, it gets back to sort of the moral of the story, which is that decentralization and a lack of regulation does not translate to added security, does not translate to you're more secure or better off, right? That's not how it works. So decentralization is great. I understand the idea that people don't want central authority, but when you don't have central authority, that means that there's no one responsible for making sure things work right. And I think if anything, the world of crypto has taught us that people do not act in beneficial ways for the hope of the universe. They act in their own best interests. What was the old mantra from Wall Street? Right? Greed is good, right? Well, if you believe in the central system, then you better hope that greed is good, because that's the only other way it's going to work. And the reality is that's not how things should work. Yeah, when greed is good, people start doing bad things. They start trying to undermine the system for their own benefit. And there has to be someone at some level who can step in and pull out those bad actors and isolate them, because otherwise, you know, the apple ruining the barrel. If the barrel is cryptocurrency, otherwise those rotten apples are going to ruin the entire barrel.
It's exciting that you all are working on solving this problem. I'm curious, you know, maybe as we close up here, tell us about, you know, where the product is today. You guys launched out of stealth a couple months ago. I'm sure people listening are going to get excited and say, oh man, I've got to get access to this data. How do they go about doing that?
Sure. You can reach us through our website, through LinkedIn. We have lots of different ways to contact us. I'm happy to talk more about the product. But again, look, we're trying to create something new for this market, right?
Yeah.
If you're trying to search for a bad actor, instead of trying to search by a wallet address, search by a phone number. Search by first name, last name. You know, the way you would normally do it, the way a bank would do it when they're doing a KYC search. Because a wallet address, what's the likelihood you're going to meet success? It's very low.
This is actually a great point I'd love to dig in on a little bit more. We touched earlier that you're collecting effectively KYC information.
Yeah.
And you're doing that by looking across the dark web. So this is not people who have signed up for a service and, you know, done the, here's my ID, kind of held it up to the screen. You're pulling together information, presumably across a bunch of different sources that allow you to get some level of real world identity on people. How effective is that? Like, I don't have any experience in this. Kind of
how
walk
effective
me through
it is
what
it
this looks like.
Depends what methods you're using, right?
Yeah.
But look, we deal all in open source information, right? So we're doing all passive data collection. We're doing everything is consensual, right? But the truth is that, and this is one of the great wonderful things about the internet, is you can never imagine what people just throw up on the internet, just people post openly on the internet, right? And we see that sort of every day, but that allows us to really better understand who these folks are. A blockchain address is not a means to try to figure out who someone is, right? That's anonymous by its very nature, right? Being able to search by first name, last name, a phone number, an email address, those are the kind of things that, you know, are more typical in terms of doing due diligence searches, KYC searches, and getting real results, like results that actually matter. We know right now that the cryptocurrency trading platforms and others, they have customers who they don't really want to have. These are bad actors, right? These are people who are stealing from them as well as everybody else, right? And they can't pull them out. There's no way for them to identify them. We have a much better way of doing that. And we're sort of moving closer and closer to where we can identify all the bad actors in this universe and kind of pull them out and say, look, if you want to do business with them, that's your business. But just understand, you're going to lose money by doing that. These people are engaged in behavior, which is inherently risky. And it's undoing the market. It's against everyone's interests. It's against the interests of the trading platforms, the investors, the regulators. This is against everyone's interest. And it's in everyone's interest to insure themselves against this problem. And I think, you know, look, ransomware, very easy to get headlines. Russian hackers, there's just so many cool things about that make headlines. This is not as, like, sensational. It doesn't have that panache, but it's a much bigger problem. Again, the deep and dark web portion of this is just the tip of the iceberg. You start looking at, like, wash trades and all this, it's a huge amount of money. We can't just sit here and just let this happen and just say this is the cost of doing business. This is not the cost of doing business. This is avoidable risk. These are avoidable losses.
Now, just before we end the originally recorded episode, we actually had Evan back on to record an update of what's happening in the world of crypto market manipulation and what he and his team have seen since Bitcoin has reached all-time highs. Let's listen in.
You know, and we often say this to folks, that it's difficult to get, like, micro view in on this market simply by trying to, like, read, like, individual rooms. You sort of have to look at the aggregate data to really get those conclusions. And looking at the aggregate data, at least the way we're looking at it, based on our numbers, it appears that the overall volume per day in this kind of activity has increased by a factor of at least 5 since January 14th. The activity goes up and down day-to-day basis, but if you look, there's a pretty straight line up. And, you know, look, you can ascribe that rise to a variety of different factors, but certainly, at least when I think about this, I do think that the price of commodities, of cryptocurrency, particularly Bitcoin, the way that the price has gone up, it's certainly encouraging people to get into the market. You know, we kept getting asked during the crypto winter, are people still really doing this? And the answer is, of course they are. They do this come rain or come shine, right? But certainly when the market is hot and there's inflationary pressure and the price keeps going up, that is encouraging these folks to get in, and we are seeing a dramatic rise in that level of activity. generally speaking, we're talking about cryptocurrencies with market caps in the billions of dollars. And I'm looking right now just at the most popular commodities that have been targeted just in the past 3 months. And like number two on our list is Solana. And I can tell you just looking at these others have been at the top list now for months. These are not recent additions. We see a lot of targeting on the Binance chain, a lot of BNB targets. The reality is that these folks are targeting cryptocurrencies that all of you know about. You probably trade in. You probably watch carefully. It's not just meme coins. It would be easier if it was, I guess, but it is coins that have multi-billion dollar market caps still, even now.
It's crazy to think illicit actors are attempting to move the prices on some of the most widely traded crypto tokens in the market. Evan also reflects on what are the biggest crypto market manipulation concerns in 2024, which is illicit actors trying to hide manipulation tactics by providing unlicensed quote and quote advice, and where some of this illicit activity is moving to, including parts of the Middle East.
What we're really concerned about, and I think the way that we sort of look at the future of this, is that people are going to stop labeling this as whatever they're labeling it as. They're just going to start labeling it as advice, right? I think you should invest at this target. I think you should get out at this target. This is what I think it's going to be. And the problem with this is it's very difficult to police that. It's very difficult to tell someone to stop doing that. It's very difficult to remove someone's account over that. I mean, it's advice, unlicensed advice, but nonetheless, it's advice, right? And that's sort of what we're seeing is that people are trying to kind of fit this in under freedom of speech protections, et cetera, et cetera. That way they can get away with doing this, even if there are increased regulations trying to curb what is happening on social media. And of course, we've seen exactly that. If you look at the MiCA legislation in Europe, there are very specific clauses dealing with, you know, manipulating prices using social media content, using social media volatility. People can see that coming, and they are already modifying their schemes to fit where it's very difficult to stop this. It's very difficult to ban this. And then, of course, the other thing is that the diversity of the people that are involved in this, right? Obviously, when you think about, you know, cryptocurrency fraud, people have different ideas about who fits into that bucket, you know, and people think about different geographic areas and whatnot. When we are looking at people participating in this right now, look, I mean, there are a number of countries that pop up very prominent, right? Russia, India, the United States, Canada. What's also remarkable is the Middle East. We're seeing a lot of activity in the Middle East, including in places like the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the UAE, which are maybe not as obvious. And it's kind of interesting to see those kind of trends and understanding who some of these folks are. We even see activity in countries like Yemen. And it's like, Yemen? Why is there a noticeable degree of fraud, crypto fraud, emanating out of suspected Yemeni actors? We're not really sure right now. The thought is that because they don't have a real economy, that this is becoming their kind of shadow economy. But it's still a theory.
Evan and his team at Cloudburst have extensive data around pig butchering and the associated fake websites, domains, crypto addresses, and other important off-chain identifiers. And he speaks on the challenges the industry is facing on combating pig butchering.
I used to study terrorism, and terrorism is a remarkably, you know, sad thing to have to study. And I never thought I would find anything as sad as that. And pig butchering is coming a close second. Some of the stories that we are seeing, very tragic stories we are seeing of victims, is just remarkable, where people who are otherwise normal, smart individuals are forking over tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars to people that they do not know on the internet and are doing so through cryptocurrency fraud schemes. Number one, it is remarkable to see who is falling for these schemes, including otherwise very smart and capable people. Number two, the amount of money that is involved is sickening. It is tens, probably hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more. And number three, the degree to which some of this is being done in a very obvious kind of out front way, and law enforcement just hasn't had the opportunity or the means to be able to track this properly. You know, we hear lots of reports about cartels in Southeast Asia that are running kind of call centers where they're literally imprisoning people to do this. But we also see more common aspects of this where we see ordinary fraudsters based right here in the United States, people that have previously engaged in what appears to be pandemic relief fraud, and now they are moving over to this, including, you know, like IT technicians and like security guards and like, you know, doing this kind of thing. It doesn't require a huge amount of technical expertise. A lot of the stuff that you need, you can literally buy off the shelf, like a crypto fraud site. You can literally buy the code right off the shelf on deep and dark web markets. The key aspect here, the difficult part, is being able to con people, right? That's the hard part, is the human manipulation. And what we're seeing is that there are a lot of people out there that have that ability. And because the tech side is so easy now, some of these small time fraudsters, small time, you're talking about $5-10 million that appears to be connected to that network. So yeah, pig butchering, huge problem, not a lot of readily available solutions, and it's becoming democratized in a very disturbing way where it's not just organized criminals, it's also disorganized criminals who are making a lot of money off this.
Evan concludes his updated insights by sharing that crypto is just one of the many commodities illicit actors are targeting when it comes to market manipulation, and how Cloudburst is able to apply its data collection and science to the Forex and meme stock markets as well.
You know, these folks will target everything. They target Forex, they target meme stocks, they target crypto. In fact, that's one of the things that we're kind of expanding to, is that we're expanding our data science to regularly traded commodities, meme stocks, Forex, because the truth is that these folks are going after all sorts of different commodities. And there are different little communities everywhere. There are communities on Discord, there are communities on Telegram, there are communities on particular proprietary forums. And these little communities, they focus on different areas. Some of them focus on crypto, some focus on Forex, some focus on meme stocks. But it's the same basic data science. It's the same basic idea. And if you can track one, the truth is it's not that challenging to track all of it, because it's basically all the same activity. Crypto is just becoming another commodity that these folks are trying to put into their arsenal. It is becoming mainstreamed, and that is how you see it. And for those who don't believe this is possible, you know, the truth is all you have to do is to look to the analogy of regularly traded meme stocks and look to the degree to which people have been able to push around the price of GameStop, of AMC, and you'll suddenly realize that if they can do that, any crypto, even Bitcoin, is within the realm of possibility.
Evan, this is amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today. I love the discussion. Excited to see the product develop and where you guys take Cloudburst.
Thank you very much. It's been great chatting with you.
Hey there. Thanks for listening to another episode. If you enjoyed what you heard today, do me a favor. Open up your podcast app, rate the show, give us a review, and tell us what you liked. Even better, share the podcast with your friends. And of course, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. Although 2024 is seeing all-time highs for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, 2023 was a year of recovery for cryptocurrency markets, with asset prices and market sentiment improving over the course of the year after a challenging 2022. But how well did investors actually fare? Chainalysis just released a blog sharing our 2023 estimates of crypto gains based on investors' interactions with centralized exchanges, including a breakdown of estimated gains by country. For all the data that you'd love to use in your presentations, head down to the link in the show notes. Also, our Crypto Crime Report webinar series dates have just been released, where we will be breaking down national security threats, compliance, market integrity, and consumer protection in crypto, along with topics like CSAM and human trafficking. Those start on March 14th. Head to the show notes and register today.